filmed in front of a live studio audience. Hey everybody, welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast recommended by the veterinary clinics of Hollywood. And here are your hosts, two guys, I guess.
Wow, thank you. That's great.
Hey,
great stuff. I'm really
great
glad.
Great to be back. Hey, you know, love being here with you guys. Love the audience. Can we get a round of applause for the people in the front row? Yeah.
Wow, this is great. I really appreciate the support. Now, I do want to address some of the controversies recently. I want to really reiterate, our show did not kill David Lynch. We had nothing to do with that. I'm pretty sure he'd never listened to an episode, so I just want to make that really clear.
Yeah.
Stop saying that.
You know, we have alibis. You know, we were here doing this.
I was here almost exclusively doing this.
No, we're joking, folks. We're joking, but we are sad. We're very sad to see one of the greats go. One of the true legends. You know, let's all give a moment out here, David. We miss you, even though you never wrote me back or called me. Or, you know,
I don't miss him. I never met the man. I don't know anything about him. I don't really have an opinion.
But, you know, we're doing like a professional courtesy thing. Come on, play along. Come on. Anyway. All right. So what's new? What's in the news?
Orb?
Hey, you hear this thing? You hear this thing about the Earth being kind of round? Hey, I know that's a controversial take. But, you know, I'm reading some stuff online and I'm watching some shows here, and they're making a pretty compelling argument that the Earth may be some kind of orb. Have you heard about this?
You hear the nervousness in his voice? I'm starting to think maybe he did have something to do with David Lynch's death.
Listen,
he tried to move us off the topic so fast.
You can't prove that pack of cigarettes was from me and that they weren't tampered with.
It's weird. You know, we weren't together that day either. You said you had something to do.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Listen, let's talk about this later, okay?
It's just, I know him personally, and he's not usually interested in orbs. It's not really his thing.
No, I have a great fascination with the round, the spherical. Obviously, I play a lot of dice games. Dice, their type of orb. To my understanding,
a six-sided orb.
Yeah, six-sided orb.
Basically, it's a very simple orb. If you extrapolate it out a few hundred times, it is basically an orb.
Yeah,
close enough to trick you.
No difference there.
I tend to roll one of those D500s. You know, when I'm playing tabletop games.
I mean, I've seen a couple gag die, right, that are like D500, D1000, and it's just a ball with numbers written on it.
Roll for initiative.
I got 942.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about what we're here to talk about, which is, of course, as loath am I am to say it, we got to talk about some anime, I think.
He's doing it again.
Yeah.
You know, TikTok died. Also, I'm just saying, no sympathy. You didn't even mention that. Maybe because it came right back, but still.
Listen, it was a brief reprieve at most, and let's be honest. I don't think it's the same. It did not come back the same. We got some Night of the Living Dead shit going on here. It's not right.
You know what? It really reminds me of like old forum days where like one of the admins or mods or whatever would get super fucking pissed and like pull the site down and be like, it's over. No one's posting anymore. It's over. It's all done. And then like 2 days later, it would go back up with like a big sticky, like, I'm not saying sorry, but I may have overreacted. I am locking the thread.
It is a bit of a taking your ball and going home move, but then coming right back and being like, why aren't you guys playing with me?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, I did call a while back when they started talking about this band. I did say, like, yeah, that's never going to happen. And then when TikTok went down for that day, I got very scared. I was like, oh, shit. I might have been wrong. But nope, I was right. Yet again. Correct. Proven correct.
Nothing ever happens. Things continually threaten to happen, but things never happen. I think that's been pretty well established.
We're in this horrible place where things are constantly happening, but also we just live in this terrible stasis where nothing seems to happen at all. It's really fun. It's great. And the fact that no good anime came out this season kind of reinforces it, because then it's like, what am I going to do? Just go back to the old stuff again, I guess?
Oh, I'm already nostalgia tripping on a bunch of old shows. I could be doing literally anything better with my life than rewatching Trigun for the 8th time, but yet here I stand, once again, arrested in my media consumption, almost Sisyphusian, the specter of the anime eagle coming down to eat my liver every couple of months when I get kind of sad.
I did try to go back to Trigun. Actually, a little while after that Trigun Stampede season ended.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people shit on Trigun. These Trigun Stampede fans have been shitting on Trigun out here, saying, hey, original Trigun, that's boomer shit. It's fucking boomer shit. Trigun Stampede's good. Original Trigun's bad. And I was like, no, come on. Hey, hold on a second. That can't be true. And then I did go back and watch Trigun. And you know what? I hate Trigun Stampede, and my opinion has not changed, but Trigun doesn't look good. It doesn't look good, man. Did not age well.
You know, of the shows that are generally well regarded from that era, it is definitely on the lower end of like animation quality, you know, unfortunately. I do still like Trigun. I think the characters are very fun. I think it's stupid that they got rid of Millie in Trigun Stampede. Millie and Meryl are a great comedic duo.
Now, are we sure they're not just holding her back for season two?
Well, that I guess I'm not sure of that. I guess that is still very much a possibility. But to my knowledge, she was not in that first season and was replaced with some dude with a mustache.
Some fucking guy.
Yeah.
Well, they aren't, obviously, they weren't insurance collectors in Stampede. She was like a journalist.
Which is funny because I think they decided to change her character that way because most people just assumed that that's what she, like a writer or journalist in the original show. Because
do they?
Well, yeah. I mean, think about it. The insurance stuff never comes up. All you do is see her making a log of stuff that happened in the episode on her typewriter at the end. In some cases, like it, the fact that they're insurance claims like adjusters is only brought up in their character introductions and never mentioned again. Mostly because I think they lost their jobs. Probably after like the second or third episode when they didn't report to work anymore.
Yeah, if their job was to like mitigate the damage of Vash the Stampede, yeah, they would lose their jobs pretty quick. I will say we never did see anyone make an insurance claim, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, no one can afford it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone actually tried to cash out on their insurance policy, which may be the most realistic part of the show.
Hey, it's a free money glitch.
Yeah. Oh, besides, like, the impending water wars, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Shouldn't neglect that part.
So, I don't know. I still like, even though it doesn't look the best, I still like the original Trigun. It has, for lack of a better word, a certain type of charm that resonates with me.
I think it's charming still, but the animation is just, there's, like, barely any in it. I don't know.
They do a lot of the like slideshow style action truncations throughout the series. They do that a lot.
Yeah. So I just want to say, you guys, you Gen Zers, you Trigun Stampede fans, you're not wrong, really, but you're not right either, because Stampede sucks. Like objectively, it's like really bad.
Okay, so really maybe we should just settle on. Maybe Trigun as a franchise just maybe isn't that good.
Maybe it's kind of cursed.
Yeah, maybe it's cursed.
You know, I think we all fell in love with the aesthetic of Trigun, which I think happens a lot in anime fandoms. Like, we love the aesthetic of a show or an anime or a manga or whatever, But when you get down to it, doesn't it just suck?
Yeah.
Doesn't it actually just kind of suck?
So I am the first to admit that a lot of my shows that I watched when I was like a teenager, and like in middle school growing up, I was very vibes based, as the kids would say these days.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, it coupled by the fact that even accounting for bad localization, bad translation, a lot of these plots and stuff are nonsensical in a lot of anime.
At best. Sometimes they're downright offensive. Like, you know,
but as you said, the aesthetic of Trigun, like post-apocalyptic cyberpunk western, that rings a lot of bells somewhere in my brain.
They call that Weird West.
Yeah, Weird West. Is that specifically like a technology kind of inflection to it?
Yeah, it can have technology, you know, like Wild Wild West has the giant steam spider.
Listen, that veers much more into steampunk, which I don't want to get into.
I don't want to get into that.
Steampunk is not what we're going for, but and then, you know, putting in the more overt, like hinting at the more overt hard sci-fi elements of the setting, like Vash and Knives being like aliens that were kidnapped and then used as like the core of power plants.
Yeah, power generators.
Yeah. Which is kind of messed up.
It's kind of messed up. They were very close. You know, if the Trigun was just a little bit different, they would be girls in boxes.
Well, at that point, we've got Outlaw Star, right?
Yeah, and then we just have Outlaw Star.
Which is another one of those shows for me. Love it. Super into the vibes. That show's consisted of like 60% like episodic filler episodes that have nothing to do with the main plot, which is barely a plot. They are trying to get to the galactic ley line, if you remember, for the sole reason of whatever it grants wishes. That's what it is. It's essentially a very dumb person's take on the plot of Stalker.
When you don't have a plot for something, just throw in a wish-granting MacGuffin. That really solves like 99% of your script problems.
Okay, these characters need motivation. Like, what are they doing here? Where are they going? Like, they're going over here to get wishes.
It's like a thing that grants wishes.
Yeah.
You know, as loath as I am to say it, because I do love death games so much, a lot of the times when the death game isn't just forced, like a Saw situation,
mm-hmm.
The only motivation is like, oh, you get a wish at the end. And it's like, well, that just sucks.
I mean, it's lame as hell. What could be a bigger motivator to people, like, to incentivize them to backstab and kill everyone around them other than
all their friends?
Yeah, all of their friends, other than the promise of some kind of magical wish-granting entity that could bring your wildest dreams to fruition.
Yes. This is actually something they make fun of in Zodiac Wars. Are you familiar with that?
No. No, as David Lynch would say.
No! Well, hell of a picture! it's called Juni Taisen Zodiac War, or Wars? I can't remember. I might have talked about it a while ago. This is like another one that's based on a light novel by Nisio Isin,
mm-hmm.
that guy who pops up a lot. It's about all the Zodiac, people who represent all the Zodiac animals, battle over the right to have a wish granted.
Sure.
And there's one character who's like, hey, I'm the good guy character. I'm going to try to like solve the war without having to like kill anybody. And all the other characters are like, oh great, you just want to like do a thing where you just wish us all back to life, right? Oh god, fucking stupid. And she's like, no, that is incredibly stupid and dumb. Nobody would ever think that would actually work. Which immediately dunks on 90% of death games.
I mean, you know, a real easy workaround there, just wish for yourself to have the ability to resurrect people. That way, not only can you resurrect all the people that died in the death game, you can go around selling your resurrection service.
That's true.
Like, easy money cheat. I don't know why these idiots aren't doing that in every single case.
Anyway, Gundam Wing, I was I was thinking about this whole thing because Gundam Wing, the Gundam G-Cux is coming out pretty soon. And as we've talked about extensively, Gundam Wing is sort of, I think, both of our Gundam touch points.
Yeah. Not only is it a Gundam touch point, it's like an anime touch point for me.
Yes. It's one of the big ones.
Yeah.
And going back to that one in particular is so rough. Because it really is just a absolutely incoherent, like, daytime soap opera that has occasional robot fights in it.
It's people talking at each other in rooms. Sometimes they cry, and sometimes they're angry. And then occasionally outside, a giant robot will be fighting. And then we cut to that for, like, a scene, but those are expensive to animate. And so if it goes on too long, somebody blows up. And then we cut back to people talking in rooms about, you know, the politics of war and what it means to be the common man caught up in a conflict.
Yeah. If it's stupid or not to be a pacifist, that comes up a lot.
I don't know if it's stupid or not to be a pacifist, but Raylina is a stupid pacifist.
She's really stupid.
She does her pacifism stupidly.
You remember the part where she's like, I'm going to turn into an evil guy? And that'll further my peace plot somehow. You remember that?
Yeah, man, I'm gonna do the fourth act heel turn.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be like, whoa! But then, you know, the writers didn't really stick with it, and so she just like went back to normal the next episode.
It did not matter at all.
Yeah,
just like everything else, that show was so vibe based. I mean, it'll obviously live in my heart forever for the moment when Hero rips up the birthday invitation. I think that's really the only reason people still talk about Gundam Wing. I think
my absolute favorite. I love that scene.
It's the best thing that Gundam has maybe ever done. And I like Gundam a lot.
Just the way he says
that shit kicked ass
after tearing it up, the way he says, I'll kill you.
I'll kill you. He rips up her birthday card and then says, I'll kill you. This is his first day at school.
Like, it's like he got his saboteur's field manual mixed up with how to survive in prison. Like, find the biggest, meanest rich girl in the schoolyard the first day and threaten to kill her to assert dominance.
Yeah, and rip up her, like, tea party invitation. Oh, fuck.
Hey, I noticed that you were super cute. Do you want to come to my pool party? Fuck off. Get out of here. I'll fucking kill you.
I'm gonna fucking kill you. And also, no, I'm not coming.
I can't argue with his message because, you know, he does get the sexy bad boy persona after that. In fact, doing that makes him 10,000 times sexier to all of these stuck-up rich kids.
Oh, the stuck-up rich Beckys have never seen a bad boy like this in Tea Party School. It drives them insane immediately. It's like the peasant boy who would die if he ate a Dorito.
Yeah. He'd die from sensory overload.
Yeah, exactly. I'm starting to get excited for that new Gundam.
G-Quacks.
I think I'm starting to get over my apprehension based entirely on the inclusion of Evangelion in the mix.
It's not just Evangelion. It is like the Evangelion guys, including Hideaki Anno. He's directing the episodes and he's doing script supervising.
Yes, it's him, but it's also the problem is I can't remember any other name besides
Anno. You're doing a Mark Frost on this guy.
Doing a Mark Frost on him, but it is one of the main directors is one of the guys who like did key animations for like a shit ton of Gainax and like a bunch of the Evangelion original show.
Sure.
So this is like, it's not just Anno. This is like Ava's like built into the DNA of this thing.
Well, okay, I think that's an assumption that a lot of people are putting onto it. I haven't seen a whole lot of promotional like stuff or about the series, but what if it's just a regular ass Gundam show? Like, what if it's not Ava at all? Which is kind of what I'm hoping for. I don't think we need to play into that angle.
I don't want it to be Ava at all. I don't want any of that shit. I just want a continuation of Witch from Mercury style space lesbians. That's all I want. Please just give me that.
See, okay, what if we do that, but we also do like a super traumatic, like a civilian on the ground POV, like 8th MS team kind of thing? That is Ava. God damn it.
Yeah, that is Ava. Sorry. And they have done that in other Gundam properties a couple times.
Yeah.
In Hathaway, most recently, they did one of my favorite Gundam sequences where the main character is escaping from a hotel that is collapsing because of a mobile suit fight happening right outdoors. And the entire camera work and scene composition is based on the collapsing hotel, and you're just getting like Godzilla style glimpses of massive robots fighting out of the windows and stuff, which is beautiful. Oh, mm-hmm. My God. That's the shit you want. You know?
I mean, that is, I think we hold it up, you and I personally, as probably the highlight of the, are we calling it, is it called the Monsterverse? These new Universal Godzilla movies that have been coming out.
I guess so. I don't know if they have an official name.
I don't know. Basically, it has never topped the Halo drop scene from Godzilla 2014.
Yes, which unfortunately was the trailer for the movie. So
talk about shooting your load too early. Goddamn.
Yeah, you got to keep your powder dry, you guys. Come on. Beautiful though. Beautiful scene.
I love that. I every now and then I just go and watch that one scene and be like, all right, this is all I ever need from the American Godzilla franchise.
Yeah, this is cinema. Mm-hmm. This is cinema.
I will say I do appreciate the Looney Tunes nature of where they're going with the series now, because the most recent film did have King Kong with a giant robot hand punching dudes Donkey Kong style. And that was very fun, and I'm very on board for it.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, I think you got to either go like, you know, Halo drop, do that, or you can just get wacky with it, which is apparently what they're doing. They put Dan Stevens in the movie. The man is basically a cartoon himself. So yeah, I think that they're doing okay at this point. But man, were there some boring ones in the middle there?
This is definitely a very pro Dan Stevens show. We are Steven heads, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I will say the Gareth Edwards one, I don't think is part of that continuity.
They're doing a reboot.
I think that stuff happened after the Gareth Edwards Halo Jump one.
Oh well, yes, very much after.
Yeah, that was post what's his name, the annoying guy who keeps saying he's gonna do a Metal Gear movie.
That guy, sure, whatever,
that guy, you know. Mm-hmm. That guy,
some dude,
Jordan Vogt Roberts is his name.
God, it makes me want to punch him.
Yeah, he's the one who started with the Kong Skull Island movie.
Oh yeah, sure. I don't know, there were some redeeming qualities about Kong Skull Island, but
yeah,
as soon as John C. Reilly showed up, I was like, what are they doing here? What is going on?
You didn't like John C. Reilly with a samurai sword? With a katana?
Taken out of context, that is one of the few things that I did like, but in context of the movie they were trying to do, which is like both a weird visual homage to like Coppola, in a lot of shots, especially the helicopter shot, that's straight up Apocalypse Now.
Yeah,
but then also doing this weird like Avengers set up the Monsterverse, like they're all agents of this monster tracking government agency.
Yeah,
and they're trying to assemble the monster team.
God, I hate that.
Yeah, real stupid,
really fucking stupid. Well, bringing it back to Gundam, Jordan Vogt Roberts, he's not just the dude who is never going to make that that Metal Gear Solid movie. He's also the one who's desperate to never make a live-action Gundam movie. Yeah. He's been working on that for a little while. That is definitely not happening.
I mean, we got the best live, like, we got the best giant robot movie, live-action giant robot movie, and that was Pacific Rim. Love that movie.
Is that the best?
Can you name a better one?
Damn. Jeez. How big does it have to be before it's a giant robot? Because I'd say RoboCop is better than Pacific Rim. That robot's pretty big.
I don't know. It's pretty big, but it's got to be bigger than like. It's got to be bigger than
that.
If it's a Chappie, size, that's way too. That's way too low.
That's too small.
That's too small.
I love Chappie. That little dude rocks. I fucking love that guy. He fucking kicks ass. I'm a Chappie defender. This is a Chappie defender show. Dan Stevens and Chappie should team up and make the best movie ever. They could pilot Gundams. I don't care. That'd be fucking kick ass.
Actually, a robot would be the perfect pilot for an even bigger robot.
Well, you know, in Star Wars, they have to put a robot in the ships to pilot the ships, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what R2-D2 exists to be? He's just like a second brain, a second dinosaur brain for the X-Wing or whatever. So Chappie could, like, ride behind Dan Stevens or even go shotgun or something. I don't know.
Like an R2-D2 thing. Or what if Chappie was a hot girl and then we put her in a box and then she had to pilot the robot along with Dan Stevens?
Fuck. This is... Why do they make normal bad shit when they could be making shit like this?
They could be making our bad shit.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention it because G-Cucks, the movie, has released in Japan. We're sitting pretty waiting for that thing to come over here. I am excited. We'll see how it turns out. Because basically that's the only anime I'm looking forward to right now. Huh? We have not found anything else.
Trust me, we've been trying. It's not like we haven't been watching these premieres, but hoo boy, is it bleak.
It's bleak. Now, I did want to say, since sharp-eared listeners might notice that we did not actually end up doing a fall roundup. That's not because we took some weeks off. That is because the only show I ended up watching was Orb. I watched Orb.
Back to the Orb.
And Dan to Dan, of course, but it, enough said about that.
Yeah, we've talked about Dan to Dan, and I did a bit of a fall roundup. I did talk about Negi Pazzi Angler last week.
Oh, yes, you're right. You mentioned Negi Pazzi.
But Orb, you talked to me a little bit about this and it seemed interesting.
Orb.
This is the one about Polish astronomers, right?
Yes. Well, wannabe astronomers, since they mostly kill anybody who mentions space. The church in Poland really frowns on space.
No one expects the Polish Inquisition, you know?
They live in constant fear. It seems like every single person in Poland in the show lives in constant fear of the Polish Inquisition. So they are pretty much only expecting the Polish Inquisition. And our main characters, up until this point, we are probably, what is it, like 17 episodes in? Since it's surprisingly doing sort of like an old school release where they actually have a full season.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which, you know, I miss that so much. I'm so sick of these half seasons getting split up, you know, into multiple different times of the year. A 12 episode stint is not satisfying.
No. And I will never call them Kurds, so do not even ask. That is stupid, and I'm pretty sure it only exists to get out of contractual obligations.
Hey, it's not a season, it's a Kur.
Yeah, you know, when they do that with live action stuff, first of all, they don't call it Kurds. And second of all, they're doing that so that they can keep the actors under contract for longer. That's the only reason they do that.
And they're doing this so they can keep the animators in their tubes longer.
Yeah, I think so. But they are just straight shooting it, so it's continuing into winter, and we're 17 episodes in. And so far, all the main characters have been executed by the Polish Inquisition. It's pretty bleak out here, but I'm really enjoying it. I think it's really good, actually. I find it very touching.
Now, is Copernicus a character?
Dog, that is...
Well, I don't know. Maybe he has, like, magic anime powers, and he's, like, a spirit of the round Earth, right? And he comes back as maybe, like, some kind of... like, maybe our main dude finds a magic rock in a cave or like a magic globe. And when he spins the magic globe, then he gets possessed by the spirit of Copernicus and gives him like, I don't know, maybe the power to turn stuff around.
That hasn't happened yet,
but it could happen.
Maybe we're working towards it.
Come on.
But has not showed up. Has not showed up in the show. The mostly since every character who gets involved with heliocentrism is almost immediately executed to death by the church in the most horrific ways you could possibly imagine. We haven't gotten to any historically relevant characters yet, but I really like that it moves in acts. I'm really enjoying that since each character has their own little branch of the story. And it's sort of the main theme is like, oh, you know, science is built on a succession mm-hmm. of achievements. And it's something that moves forward through time and space based on the dedication of like people in the moment pushing it forward. So I really appreciate the theme of like, oh, well, yeah, obviously these people die and then somebody else has to take up the heliocentrist mantle. But for a show that is about heliocentrism, I did not expect the amount and intensity of violence that I've found in Chi Orb on the movements of the Earth.
Well, I think that is one of the more fun aspects of history, is that when you think about it, science used to be a lot more kick-ass than it is right now. Right now, it's a bunch of
people
nerds.
People used to fucking die. Yeah, I mean, like, people were out here getting fucking burned at the stake for like being like germs, right?
Yeah. Hey, yeah, you know, there's stuff smaller than the eye can see. Oh, really? Well, we're the church and we're going to kill you now.
We're going to kill you for saying that. Now it's you just get death threats on Twitter.
Yeah. No meaningful action there. Back then, the church didn't like you. They'd freaking throw you on a fire.
Yeah.
They'd barbecue your ass.
Sometimes they would just do it, you know, just because. There are a couple of times in Orb where a character's like, yeah, I don't really care about all this shit. I don't really care about heliocentrism or the church or whatever, but I do like burning people to death. So what do you think? Should we do that?
Well, you know, they say try and act like the job that you want, right?
Sure, fake it till you make it. That's what you mean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, fake it till you make it. Hey, yeah. I was out here burning people anyway. If the church is doing it for, like, reasons or whatever, I need to get in on that and make this operation legit. So I guess that's the lesson of Orb, is that the church will murder your ass if they don't like you.
Yeah, I thought it would be more about the heliocentrism, but it turns out it's basically a bunch of Japanese animators being like, damn, the 1500s were fucking rough for anybody who was, like, even marginally, like, anti-Catholic.
Well, you see, that's because they don't know a whole lot about the history of astrophysics or heliocentrism, but they do know a lot about being persecuted by an authority figure.
Being burned to death through a dubious connection to Catholicism.
Yeah.
Yeah, Orb.
Hey, so are you gonna finish Orb?
Oh, I'm definitely gonna finish Orb.
Finish it out.
Orb is like good. It's like actually good. I'm still pretty surprised because I was not expecting to be hooked by the heliocentrism show. You know, I've said it a few times already, but it's now, legitimately fucking great. And the ending theme is like it's so emotionally evocative that, like, I actually watch the credits every time.
Well, you know, a good ending theme can really tie the whole thing together.
Yeah, it really ties the whole thing together.
Okay, can I tell you real quick about something that is not heliocentrism-based, but heliocentrism-based, but
Centrum.
I think just as important?
Okay, sure.
All right, good. Because I got to talk about Gyarus.
Oh, God damn it.
No, okay. I've been reading this comic, this manga, called No Gyarus in This Classroom. And I just want to give it a shout out because it is of those very rare, almost mythical-like classroom Gyaru manga that is, like, not weird or creepy in any way and is incredibly charming.
Well, then why are you reading it?
Well, it's because I'm really into these characters. It's super funny. Okay, so the basic premise is we have our two main characters. We're doing a dual protagonist kind of story here. We have a super nerdy girl and a super shy nerdy boy. And after graduating middle school, they both decide that this is finally their chance to do an image change. They're starting high school. They get to be a whole new person. And individually, they both have always looked up to the Gyaru slash like delinquent boy kind of archetype.
Sure.
And they're like, wow, those guys are so free. They get to be whoever they want. They always look like they're having a good time and they have tons of friends. I'm going to be that when I get into high school and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And then because they're two little nerd kids, they both get into like the most prestigious high school and realize that everyone there is also like shy nerd types, and there aren't any people that they they aren't any Gyarus or bad boys, and so now they are stuck as the default class Gyaru, except they don't know how to like be that. They're just putting on the costumes, basically the aesthetics
Gyaru
and
face.
So it's yeah. That is a whole different thing that we can get into. let's save that for a different episode.
Oh, there's layers there.
Yeah. And so it is them realizing that they have to, like, basically wing this new personality and then constantly failing and in the sense that they're like, all right, I'm gonna be like the bad boy type. And then he ends up getting voted class president because everyone thinks he's so cool and nice.
This sounds like a winning strategy for them. Is this framed as a problem?
Well, it is framed as a disappointment in the beginning until they start. Well, first of all, you know, the first couple of chapters are devoted to them meeting each other and becoming friends. Again, they have the mistake. They make the assumption that either one is an actual delinquent type personality and so are intimidated at first of getting to know each other. And then both come to realize that they're big softies, and
they're posers.
Yeah, they're posers. It's a comic about, thank you,
loathsome posers.
It is in fact a very fun little comic about posers, and through the course of the chapters so far, they've kind of integrated some other characters into their little friend group. And again, because the theme is posers, we have a super shy guy who wants to be like the pretty boy, rich kid archetype, whatever sure. you would call it. And so that's the kind of person that he's trying to be, but he is neither outgoing nor rich, so he cannot pull it off. And then most recently they added my favorite character so far, which is the what do you call it, like super delicate, quiet, like elegant girl, like class rep type.
Yeah.
But in actuality, she's a Goku. She was raised in the mountains by her karate loving grandpa, and she only eats meat and is like super strong.
Wow.
I think that's very funny.
Okay. All right. So it's a bunch of posers.
Yeah.
It's just a show. It's a show about posers. Well, the loathsome poser.
I don't know. It's not a show yet. It is a manga. But yes, it is a manga about posers in the most endearing way possible. I don't want to besmirch these people. They're a fun-loving group. They're nice. People like them.
You find these posers endearing despite being posers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's probably because I, you know, to no one's surprise, am also a bit of a poser. I know it's a shock to hear, but
what are you posing as?
A functional human.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. You could have fooled me.
I don't know. I just wanted to throw this out. No Gyarus in this classroom. Check it out. It's a fun little read. And there's about 15 chapters out right now. So it's still real early on.
Okay. If you can stomach a story about the loathsome poser, that does sound kind of fun.
All right.
We have a couple of premieres there that we didn't get to last episode. So why don't we take a break and then come back with more new shows. Wow.
Good 2025 God.
Winter anime. Goody-ish. Winter season premiere anime 2025.
And you know, it's like, wow.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Anime Death Spiral is about to return.
All right, guys, if you can believe it, they actually aired even more anime. I was...
Despite my request for them to stop, they kept doing it.
Frankly, I was really hoping we were done, but no, they in fact made even more. Not too many more. I only watched... two more premieres. Not sure how many you got to, but I've got two to talk about.
I also have two to talk about.
Okay, I figure we can trade off.
Sure.
Here's the dregs of anime fall 2025 season premiere anime fall. Wait, it's winter. Fuck.
Yeah.
God damn it.
The brain rot is setting in. The dementia is taking hold.
Oh, God. Winter 25 anime premieres. Winter season 25. Oh, boy. Do you have a good one? I'd really like to start on a high note.
Well, okay. I've got one. It's not a good one, but it is... incredibly straightforward, and so I think that means I can keep it relatively brief here. I watched,
okay,
and take a deep breath for this. I'm a behemoth, an S-ranked monster, but mistaken for a cat, I live as an elf girl's pet. This is one of the
God.
Now here's the thing. It's about an adventurer, a knight who gets eaten by a dragon and reincarnated in the dungeon as an S-ranked behemoth monster, except that he just looks like a regular cat. You know, this is, how do you say it? This is one entry in a long line of these, like, faux isekai, not isekai kind of generic fantasy anime, where the main character's power is that he can just steal powers from other monsters. You know, we got that a couple seasons ago. Remember Re-Monster?
Oh, yeah.
That was a recent anime that came
Unfortunately,
out.
Unfortunately, yes, I do remember Re-Monster.
Yeah.
And it also got a season two.
Mm-hmm.
So great. Great.
I don't know. What's that one? I was reincarnated as a vending machine in the dungeon. Its ability is that it can just vend out different monster powers, something like that.
You'd imagine that the vending machine one would be kind of charming because, like, how could a vending machine develop a harem of cute anime girls? But nope, cute anime girl harem. They love the vending machine.
They really love it for some reason.
Wow.
And so as a S-ranked behemoth monster who can steal powers from other monsters, but it looks like a cute cat, obviously the only thing to do at that point in your life is find an elf girl, preferably one with cartoonishly large breasts, and decide to be her pet. And so it's just porn. It's porn. It's just porn. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I'm not saying that as a over-exaggeration. Like, it's straight up porn. He gets adopted by the elf girl with the giant breasts, and very first scene, her introduction scene, is her undressing in front of him, and they go full frontal, baby. They show it all.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is just, well, I hate the term ecchi, but I guess that would be the descriptor here.
Yes, it is ecchi. The worst kind, because it is, you know, a what I can only describe as a sex romp comedy, a la the 1980s style of female characterization. And so much of the jokes, at least in the first episode, are a Porky's-esque take on the idea of, you know, voyeurism and dubious consent, really.
Great.
Yeah. I hate it. It's cool. Awful. Will not watch
now,
more.
I don't know if you remember, this one was a little back, maybe a year ago, My Life as Inukai-san's Dog.
Oh.
Do you remember this one?
Yeah, that's a real bad one.
Yeah, after I became a dog, I was picked up by the person I like.
See, that one is actually, like, even worse, I would say, than this. Because that one is straight
no
up
pretense.
About a dog that wants to fuck a human person.
Well, he is a guy who's turned into a dog.
Yes. Well,
I don't know if that makes it better or worse. I am just clarifying. I want to make that clear.
Well, okay, as long as we're clarifying, he's a human guy that turns into a dog whenever his crush kisses him, and turns back into a human whenever his crush kisses him.
Wait a second. Hold on. Is that true?
That is true, yes. That's the premise of that show.
That's what happened?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I'm looking.
Because
I'm looking
of a science
up.
Experiment.
I'm looking this up. It says, okay, it says here he ate a spiked chocolate box on Valentine's Day, and that's what turned him into a dog. That's what Wikipedia says.
Yeah, and then later on, he discovers that he can turn back into a human.
By kissing,
yes.
Now, what does kissing mean to a dog? Just, like, licking the face?
I guess that's a good question.
You know?
I never got that far to figure it out. And trust me, I was pulling for these characters, but really, it just got too much after a while.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, okay, well, great.
I say that this is better in the sense that the Catman is not literally wanting to have sex with this elf lady.
Wait, are you sure about that?
He is. He says he's completely content to just watch her undress and be naked, without her knowledge of his intelligence.
He's good with that. He has no further intentions. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. No. He's fine with that. He's like, as long as I can be a cat and watch naked chicks without them knowing that I like it, that's good enough for me.
Oh man.
This is all just what the first episode sets up. I'm just telling you what I saw.
Wow. I hate that.
Yeah, I hate it. It's truly awful.
I hate it.
But
I
had to see, because on the place where I watch my anime, where I consume it directly into my vein, it did label the episode as I'm a behemoth, an S-rank monster, but mistaken for a cat. I live as an elf girl's pet. Parentheses, uncensored 18+. And so, that's turns out still a really good marketing strategy. So thumbs up for them.
Okay, great. I'm really glad we got around to that one. Okay.
Well, okay. It's going to make whatever you talk about next seem like an actual work of art.
That is true. I guess we only have room to grow. I can say definitively that both of the things I watched are not that loathsome. So, geez, I guess the season is getting better. Let me start at the worst one and then go to the better one. I think that's the way we should play this. Cause I watched Momentary Lily.
So only some kind of temporary lily, a fleeting lily.
A fleeting lily. Yes, exactly. Okay. This is by Gohans, the team that brought you such classics as K, the girl I like forgot her glasses.
I wonder if she ever found them.
And of course, one of the ones we talked about quite a lot, the masterful cat is depressed again today.
Oh, yep. You mean this asshole cat keeps getting on my case?
The piece of shit cat is an asshole again today. Yep, that one. One of my least favorite anime maybe ever.
I can't go out for a drink without my cat negging me.
Fuck, I hate that cat. And he's too big. That cat is too big.
He's a Clifford cat. He's a Clifford-sized cat.
Well, no, he's not a Clifford-sized cat. Clifford was very famously, like, the size of a house. Like a two-story house. Clifford was big.
Well, he got that big, but he didn't start that big. He was relative in size to this cat at one point in his life, but I digress.
Masterful Cat also did not start that big. It's very, very clear that Masterful Cat started as a small cat.
Maybe if the show had kept going on, he would have turned into a kaiju cat.
maybe. I'll never find out because I hated it.
Is Clifford the dog a kaiju?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Maybe he's a giant robot.
Oh, that'd be kick ass. Anyway.
I did not hate Momentary Lily.
Okay, well, that's a good start.
I did not despise Momentary Lily. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You only despised it.
I know. I only disliked it.
Oh, you only disliked it. Did not despise it. Okay.
Momentary Lily is, on the surface, a sort of neo magical girl show, but it's kind of not. It's very hard to describe because it has, like, no substance. It's very strange. We start with a group of five girls who all are the most transparently generic magical girl archetypes, right?
Sure. Straight out of the box.
We've got the cool, mysterious one. We've got the girly kind of like airhead one. We've got the one that's just the big boobs one. We've got the nerd one, and then we've got the teacher's pet one.
Okay, so this is the cast of Sailor Moon. Got it.
Yep. And into their lives bustles. Before I get to that, they kill like giant alien things in a completely deserted Tokyo. It's never actually discussed, but apparently they are like seemingly the only surviving members of the human race in this city. And this isn't really a big deal to anybody. It's barely even commented on. They just kind of chill out, having a good time, being friends, the best of friends, you know. And then a monster will show up and they'll be like, oh, another monster. Okay, let's go kill this one.
Time to go.
And then they kill
Here
it.
Here I go killing again.
Here I go monster slaying again. And they slay it with their generically like kind of Norse mythology named super weapons that they all have for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And into their lives wanders a sixth girl, if you can believe it. And she is a main character type, so sort of more generic than the other ones, but kind of like just kind of a mix of all of them together. She's sort of like, ditzy, but mysterious, but also like likable and shy and all this stuff, you know.
Hey, how come she gets to have multiple character traits? That's not fair.
Yeah, and in fact, she has another one, which is, because apparently she's been living alone since she has, like, even her earliest memories, she's just been alone, wandering this deserted city.
How does she know how to speak then?
Good question. Apparently, somewhere in the recesses of her mind, she must have listened to a podcast, maybe. Let's say
this podcast.
Yeah, purely by chance, she happens upon the five best friends,
mm-hmm.
and is very scared that she'll have to, like, prove her worth. So she teaches them to cook.
Okay, that's kind
of
cool.
Now, this may seem kind of, like, out of nowhere, but it turns out this is a cooking show.
Okay, was not expecting that pivot, but all right.
Yeah, neither was I, until I kept waiting for, like, a story to kick in. And then the main character meets the other ones. It's the inciting incident. And then we go into an extended, very involved cooking segment, because apparently the five girls, not a single one of them knew how to cook. So our main character just shows up and is like, hey, you guys have just been eating Top Ramen this entire time. Let's do, like, I don't know, homemade udon or whatever. And they're all so thankful that they're like, you can join our monster hunting squad. And yeah, that's it.
I gotta say, that sounds, at least the cooking part, you know, interests me. I like the idea of a loop of hang out, go monster hunting, come home, cook a meal. It is very reminiscent of, like, that's what I like about, you know, going back to an earlier thing, Dandadan in the manga. I find it incredibly charming how they end every major, like, story beat with the collected, like, the increasingly large collection of characters all coming together and having a big meal together. I think that's very fun.
Yep.
I don't think that it would be improved by putting it into some kind of magical girl idol group context. That part is maybe throwing me off a little bit. It feels weird. You know, it feels very
weird.
Like this is waifu bait. Like this is waifu bait.
It's very transparently waifu bait. Yeah, it's sort of like if Dandadan, they did about 5 minutes of, like, ghost action on either side of 15 minutes of cooking that meal that you mentioned. like if the meat of the Dandadan episode was just making that meal that they all eat, that's kind of what we're dealing with here.
That is so bizarre for this context of magical girls fighting aliens. I could have sworn that they were going for, like, a Nier Automata kind of thing. Or what's the other one that just came out? Stellar Blade, where it reveals that they're, like, robots fighting aliens.
Literally anything like that could happen at any second, which was what I was expecting, because it felt so uncanny. The entire premise and everything that was happening felt like we were seconds away from a like Madoka Magica style twist. But no, didn't happen. Now the other thing about this show, and this is something you're not going to hear a lot, but
a lot.
It is grotesquely over animated.
Okay. I mean, that just adds into one of my growing frustrations in the industry right now, and this is something that I've noticed over and over again, and I've actually thought about, like, the shows that are getting these stupidly overproduced animation budgets are not the ones who deserve it, goddammit.
They're not the ones that have any reason to have it. This show does not need to have the amount of animation. And also, I should mention, the animation is almost entirely dedicated to, like, things bouncing around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What kind of things, Remy? What kind of things are bouncing around?
You know, like in a game, let's say, like Stellar Blade, where all of like the soft body physics have been turned up to an insane amount.
A cartoonish amount.
Yeah, so like gravity is like 2.5 times all of the soft body movement. So essentially hair and boobs just like go insane at the slightest breeze. Well, for some reason, they decided to recreate that effect, but in animation. So a character, let's say the big titty one, for example.
Oh.
Will turn her head to the side and her tits will like just go insane. Like they'll go crazy.
Like I want them to go like Bethesda, like game engine glitching out crazy. They're just violently vibrating and stretching out into weird shapes across the room.
It is one step away from doing that, essentially. And so that and like hair is just going insane at the slightest movement. And that's really distracting.
So weird. I don't think I mentioned this, but Okitsura, I fell in love with an Okinawan girl, also doing the same thing. Not quite as egregious with the soft body movement physics, but definitely... the way clothes and specifically skirts and hair are way, way over animated, even compared to the bodies that they're attached to, it gives it a really weird, like Uncanny Valley kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's in fact very bad.
Or what? We're just animating the parts that you're going to be looking at the most anyway.
Yeah,
I believe I believe that is their actual argument. If you were to ask these producers and the higher ups at these studios,
I can't argue with that. Also, all the other things in the show are just 3D.
Mm-hmm.
The monsters are 3D. The super weapons are 3D. So they really saved all the actual animation budget for hair and boobs.
Okay, so that tips it for me, because again, another thing that Okitsura doesn't even have giant robots and aliens exploding. It way over animates the like three main characters, and then every background character is a 3D doll rig, like just doing doing stuff in the background. It's really fucking awful.
That's really bad. I've been noticing that more and more in some modern productions, and it's not good. Not good. Not good, folks.
No, I don't think it's controversial to say. I would rather have the animation budget going into other things. Like, make the whole thing look just kind of okay instead of way over animating the boobs and butts of these, frankly... children is what I'm going to call them.
These doll-like children.
Yeah, these doll-like children.
Give me the old style where they just straight up were painted backdrops, you know? I'll take that.
Oh, man. Okay. I gotta stop looking at screens of Momentary Lily. It's given me the weirds.
It's bizarre. I don't know if you watched the trailer for it, but you can see what I mean in a couple scenes where it's just like, why are the things, why is everything moving that much? That's my whole review of this show. Why is everything moving that much?
Well, why are everything moving so much?
Why are everything moving much? And then why is there a cooking show in it?
Well, see, that part I'm okay with compared to everything else you described. If we were to focus on one aspect, I would say go with the cooking. Drop everything else. It is definitely the least morally reprehensible.
Well, I don't know. You haven't seen these recipes. Okay, this is as more than I wanted to talk about this show. What else do you got?
Okay, well, you'll be happy to know that I found a charming little horror anime.
Oh, great!
Yeah, no, it really is probably one of the most horrifying concepts I can think of in this modern day and age, and that is inter-office romances, like. Can you imagine? I Have a Crush at Work, parentheses, Can You Keep a Secret?
Okay.
okay, I wanted to follow, I wanted something to follow up, I'm a monster that peeps on elf girls.
Yeah, and you remembered last season where you really enjoyed My Work Girlfriend is 4 feet Tall or whatever that show was called.
Well, I wanted to find at least something in this pile of slop from this season that was about two, like, adults, and I use that term sparingly, but two adults that are in, like, an actual consenting relationship and are happy to be with each other. Of course, the closest I could do was I Have a Crush at Work, which is about, as you may guess, two co-workers who, to their credit, do that one thing in romance anime and romance manga that I really like, where they start the series with them saying, hey, I really like you, let's like date and get to know each other better, and they're both into each other and enthusiastic about it, and most importantly, they're both adults, they're both 28 years old.
Yay.
And so this is if anything a commentary on, I don't know what you want to call it, but the idea that it is somehow super embarrassing to, like, be dating somebody. Do you know what I'm talking about in a lot of these anime? Where the
like in general? Like, yeah. Being in a relationship is embarrassing?
Yeah, just, like, being in a, no, having people know that you're in a relationship is embarrassing. Like, unto itself. And not just that it does cause complications when you're both coworkers, which is true.
Well, you know, it wanting emotional or, you know, a sexual relationship, just needing that in your life is embarrassing. We should all strive to be perfectly alone in all things we do. Just, you know, stoic and badass.
That's the entire premise of this show, is these two people are dating, but they don't want their coworkers to know, and so they go on increasingly, again, they're not playing these for laughs, they're playing it straight, but they go on to increasingly great lengths to hide the fact from the people in their lives that they're just, like, dating someone. And I don't get it. Obviously there's something lost in cultural translation here, but I don't understand what the big deal is about just people knowing that you're in a relationship. They don't even work in the same office. They work in different departments on different floors of the same building. And somehow that is considered so scandalous to their, like, not just their coworkers, but to them themselves, the two people who are ostensibly in love with each other. They feel this need to hide their relationship because of reasons. Like, I don't know. I don't get it.
Did you address this part? Like, where in the chain of command do they lie in relation to each other?
Neither of them are managers,
and so they're horizontally spread out.
They're horizontally spread out and separated by both physicality, in the sense that they work, like, they make a point of saying that they work four different floors away from each other. Like, they don't even see each other during their day. Like, it's played up as a very cute, like, thing that they get excited when they run into each other on the elevator, because that's, like, the one time at work during the day that they get to see each other. They do not interact. Their departments have very little, like, codependency between each other. They're just coworkers.
So the title is pretty misleading.
I mean, it's not, though. So I Have a Crush at Work. They work for the same company, just...
They don't even work together. Like,
they do not work together.
They have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. They have nothing to do with each other.
So it's not like an office romance in the traditional sense.
No, it is a romance where the two leads happen to work in the same office together.
They just work in the same building.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And somehow this is considered embarrassing enough to where they have to, like... she straight up says, like, all right, we're going to meet for this movie. You get off three stops before me and walk the rest of the way so no one sees us on the same train station platform. I'm going to be wearing a mask and a hat and sunglasses so people won't recognize me. Also, don't hold my hand until we get into the theater, but only after the lights go down so no one can see.
Do they not understand that this behavior makes it seem like you're fucking, like, cheating on your wife with this person?
I don't think they do. I don't think they do realize that. And the worst part is that I think that they actually do have good reason to go to such lengths, because they also make a point that the office gossip game in these places is off the hook. Like, it is wild and out there.
Like, oh, they're getting crazy with it.
They're getting crazy. Like, crazy invasion of privacy stuff just to figure out who's dating who. And I just don't get it. Are their lives so banal and uninteresting that this is what they glean entertainment from, trying to figure out which of their coworkers are maybe possibly fucking each other? Which, by the way, another thumbs up to the show, they are, they don't show it. It's not pornographic, like S-ranked cat pervert, but,
well, they're adults. So, like, who would be interested in that?
It does not shy away from the fact that, they are in fact adults in, like, an adult relationship, and they fuck.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. Good for them.
Now, if only they could overcome the bizarre need for secrecy and clandestine actions, they would have a healthy relationship.
Well, I think it's more sad to consider that they need to keep this secret, because they do make the very clear implication that if people were to find out they were dating, they would very much get treated differently and in a much more hostile and unfriendly manner.
Well, as long as they're not fired, like, who gives a shit?
I don't know. I think I'd rather be fired than have to work with a bunch of people that hate me for having a girlfriend or hate me for having a boyfriend.
So you think this is incel dumb rearing its ugly head?
I'm not going to say that, but I'm saying that there's some overlap here that, you know, set off some alarms for me. Like, this is very much what would be considered normal, normcore, normies are these characters, is how they would be labeled in any other romance manga. The detestable normie who has loving, committed relationships and very few qualms about being in one.
So what is the show?
Well, you know, the show is they'll go on a date and then possibly run into a family member or a coworker, and then they have to think up an excuse or some kind of quick scheme to make it look like they're not on a date with each other. And that's the show. There, that's the whole show.
So every episode is just a gag where they try to look like they're not dating.
Yes. And then, you know, they go home together to their apartment at the end of the day. By the way, they're living together. They live in the same ass apartment, like, together as a couple. And then they have to take different train schedules so people don't figure out that they live at the same apartment. Even though they work for the same company and the mailing department definitely knows that the mail goes to both of their shared address.
Weird. It's so weird that the checks are sent to, or wow, maybe they have a PO box.
Oh, I haven't even thought of that. They may do that at some point. They may reveal their mail goes to a P.O. box.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. This is really disturbing.
It sounds like hell. It sounds like they are living in a literal hell dimension.
It's crazy that this would just be like a I'm cheating on my wife sitcom in basically any other context. Or, you know, this is Three's Company, basically, except it the other way around.
Yeah. So I don't know. I may give this a couple more episodes just because, again, I'm very endeared to the fact that they're both adults. So rare in anime these days to have a show that's just about adults doing normal things, quote unquote normal.
Not normal. That's really not normal.
But yeah, I don't know. It's not a great season otherwise. So this is what I'm left with.
Okay, Jesus Christ. Well, I've got one more.
Okay.
And this was probably the least offensive, I think, of all the shows that I watched. This one is called Tasokare Hotel.
I did see a trailer for this one. This is about the, like, interdimensional hotel that's always in Twilight Realm or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's a pretty standard setup. You know, we're in purgatory. There's a million shows like this, essentially. A girl wakes up in purgatory, in the space between life or death. Starts off a little grisly because we do see her dying. She's got, like, a knife in her gut, and she's bleeding out in the middle of the street. So we start off like, holy shit.
Okay.
This is about to get intense. The intensity immediately ratchets down as she discovers that she's in purgatory. There's a hotel in purgatory. It's run by a sort of like goofy, lovable cast of characters who help people stuck in purgatory remember their lives. And then once you've remembered your life, you basically choose to continue living or go to heaven.
Oh, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
I mean, come back from
dying or go to heaven. Like, those are pretty premium options.
It's not bad.
There's not even a hell option.
It's not even bad. Well, in traditional, I think, Japanese style, we get the option to move on, right?
Okay, sure.
Which I interpret as, like, pretty good. Seems pretty nice.
Yeah. So what's the catch?
It's not like... Yeah, you're not going to burn in hell or whatever. You're just moving on from your life. So she doesn't figure out who she is. All she does is find, like, her I don't think it's even a driver's license. Her citizenship ID.
Her state-issued ID card.
Yeah, so she knows her name, but then kind of gives up on searching because she immediately becomes way more interested in other people's dilemmas. And starts solving people's mysteries for them, which I don't think is the point. I think you're supposed to do it yourself. But she just starts doing it for other people. And that becomes the main meat of the show, is her solving other people's mysteries and then them choosing whether to return to life or move on. Which to me sounds like a little bit of a busybody, like kind of, you know, mind your own business, chick. Like what the fuck?
I thought the whole part, like the whole thing about reincarnation and Buddhist philosophy is that you can't have other people do that shit for you. Like, you have to look inward. You can't outsource this shit.
Turns out you can.
Oh, shit.
If somebody just butts in, you know, and just decides to do it for you, apparently you can.
Hey, asshole, you're doing enlightenment wrong.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? Even if it's like, hey, I didn't want to remember that. She's like, hey, I found this weird thing under the bed in your hotel room. What is this about? And they're like, oh, no, I didn't want to remember that part.
Re-traumatize you.
Yeah, she's kind of an asshole.
Okay, what if it was about her, like, specifically uncovering bad memories to fuck with people? That would be funny.
It's sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. You don't know until you find it, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm saying in a different series, I would have this character be almost like a malicious Bugs Bunny type, where they dig around in people's brains and unearth their most... traumatic or embarrassing memories to fuck with them, or maybe blackmail them. That's basically the plot of Persona 5, right?
Yeah, that is true. Mm-hmm. You destroy them mentally by digging around in their memories.
That sounds like a much more useful like use for useful use, a much more effective use for this type of power than just, you know, getting to come back to life or not.
I would expect basically anything after the really intense bleeding to death intro, but it's just kind of gentle. Here's your life style purgatory meddling. You think it's going to be a horror or a thriller or something, maybe something kind of Hell Girl like. Are you familiar with Hell Girl?
A little bit, yeah.
Because she does kind of what you're suggesting. She, you know, somebody writes your name in the death note, the online death note. It's a website, sort of a GeoCities site in that. And then Hell Girl gets on your case and she does a little bit of detective work messing around with your life and then determines whether you should go to hell or not. And usually the answer is yes, you should. And then she kills you.
See, that's awesome. That kicks ass.
Yeah, it does kick ass. Hell Girl's great.
Now, I have one question.
Doesn't do that.
Okay. I do have one question about the intro. You say that she's stabbed in the stomach with a knife sticking out of her, right?
Yeah.
Does the knife stay there through the series?
No, when she wakes up, she's knifeless and also not even wearing the same clothes. She's been dressed in some kind of outfit.
Okay, well, rude, but all right.
Rude, yeah.
I think that, again, if I were to make a change to this, I would have the knife sticking out of her the whole show.
Really, I think that would be cool.
Really drive it home that she has been, that she is an undead, some kind of undead avenging spirit, messing with people's memories. And yes, she's been stabbed. You can tell that because she has a big knife sticking out of her stomach the whole series.
She's definitely been murdered.
Yeah.
Like, for sure.
Like, now, I want characters to say when they see her for the first time, like, wow, you've been murdered. You have a knife in you.
You've been murdered. Not a lot of people come here when they've been murdered. Usually they're for real dead.
And people are drawing a lot of attention to the knife pretty much in every scene, to the point where I would say it's mostly about the knife, and people would comment on what type of knife it is. You know, maybe some guy's like, hey, I was a chef for this many years in my life. I recognize that knife. And maybe the whole mystery...
That's a knife. I would know. I worked in a kitchen.
Listen, maybe the mystery is figuring out who knifed her in the stomach with this big knife by solving other people's mysteries. Each mystery that she solves sheds another clue on her own stomach knifing.
Well, she could just solve her own mystery. That is also an option. It seems like she is actually avoiding solving her mystery, which is there waiting for her the entire time. She could just go solve it.
She can just do it.
Yeah, she's choosing very actively not to do
that. Okay, so she's projecting a little bit by solving these other people's mysteries. She is avoiding, you know, she's projecting this anxiety about her own stomach knifing by solving the murders and life issues of these other people.
Oh yeah. No, this is textbook avoidant behavior.
Yeah. Okay.
On her part. Now, the weird thing, you mentioned the knife thing, there is something similar to that.
Now, did I mention the knife enough? Because I wanted to make a pretty big point about the knife. The knife should be central.
You've mentioned the knife more than the show has.
Okay.
But when people die and they show up here, they are changed in some way until they've solved their mystery. The first person she meets is a guy whose head is just fire.
His head is on fire, or his head is fire?
His head is fire.
Okay, well, that kicks ass.
It's a fire, yeah. Like, no neck, just a ball of fire. I guess it kind of has eyes, so you know where to look, but it is just fire. Pretty cool, because some of the other people are not as lucky. Like, there's a guy who just looks like a monkey. That kind of sucks. And one of the first mystery that's solved, the girl's head is just a tarot card. That kind of sucks.
There's one lady who just gets reincarnated with the head of Ted Danson. No explanation. It's really weird.
I committed suicide because I could never date Ted Danson. one of the other ladies is a flapper with horns. That's just her deal.
She's just very a flap. Weird. I mean, All right, I'm listening now. Tell me more about the flapper with horns. She sounds like my type.
Yeah, and the people who work at the hotel, it's made very clear that they're just people who, like, obviously didn't want to solve their own mystery, so they decided to stick around. But our main character very pointedly does not get ahead.
I don't know why. No wins for this person?
Yeah, no interesting at all. I don't know why. It's a very strange choice. She's just normal.
So it's all about giving all these people weird heads that are somehow representative of their tragic demise, and she just gets nothing?
She just gets nothing.
Okay, all right. This is an actual guess here. I'm going to call this now. If you follow through on this series, you got to let me know. I think that she was reincarnated with the head of the person who stabbed her.
I mean, that would be sick as hell. I would like that twist.
That would be such a cool twist.
But the thing is, like, the first thing she finds is her own ID card, and it has her face on there, so...
I mean, if she doesn't have memories, maybe it's not her ID card.
It could be someone else's ID card. That's true. That would be a fun twist. The tenor and tone of the show seems like that's not going to happen.
All right. But I don't know.
I guess who knows, right? Who knows?
All I'm saying is that anime is easy to write, and like we're coming up with these fire ideas right here off the dome.
It's usually easier to write than it seems, because, man, like, it's really easy to come up with better shit. Oh, maybe that means it's way harder.
Oh, no. I don't like it when things are hard.
Yeah, I don't know. This is not offensive, again, in any way. It's a perfectly fine show that is maybe just a little bit too gentle for its own good. Because it was okay, but I kind of just boring. Like, not really that exciting. The mystery they solve isn't really interesting.
Well, hey,
kind of just whatever.
Same with I Have a Crush at Work. In what we are faced with this season, I will take inoffensive and boring over the opposite.
Yeah, I guess it's just comparing it to, like, you know, the one that came to mind immediately was Death Parade. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing as Death Parade, except for Death Parade, like, spins a mystery, and it has, like, an interesting angle on it. Especially the part where they, like, usually they'll pit characters against each other, which is kind of a cool thing. This show just doesn't really, it doesn't land it really at all. So I don't know.
Hoo boy.
Blah. This is a blah.
Yeah. All right. Is that it? Are those?
That's it.
Oh,
that's
God.
It, baby.
Winter 2025. May the gods have mercy on us all for invoking
Jesus
their wrath.
Christ. Now, the only hope we have left at this point is mid-season premieres. Let's not hold our breath, but hoo boy.
All right.
God damn. I'm going to watch Ishira. I'm going to keep watching that. I'm going to watch Orb.
I don't think it's a mid-season. It's probably not until next season, but Gundam G-Cux, looking out for
Gundam,
that one.
Gundam G-Cux. Like I said, the movie's already out in Japan. I'm going to be looking forward to Gundam G-Cux. Otherwise, oh boy.
May God have
mercy on our souls.
We got the Chainsaw Man movie coming up from MAPPA. We got Dungeon Meshi season 2 coming out in the spring, maybe summer spring. So I don't know. We gotta bear with the cold winds of winter before we can get to the sweet scent of spring flowers.
God help us all.
Okay, I think that's it. People, lovely, tall, handsome listeners, go continue to... wait, no, don't continue to not comment and not download and not like our stuff. We want you to do the opposite of that.
Please continue to not listen to the show.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing.
And we'll be here waiting when you come crawling back. check us out on Blue Sky. I guess we're on TikTok, and then we weren't on TikTok for about 6 hours, and now we're back on TikTok again.
We're back, baby. We're fucking back.
We're back.
Oh, thank God, because that is by far our most popular account.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All right. Until next time.
Bye. And Charles Bukowski was like, holy shit, this thing rocks. Fuck, TV kicks ass.